Welcome to the Retzel Health Law Hotspot. Health Law Hotspot is a podcast for physicians and health professionals that covers the legal issues and trends that affect the healthcare industry.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Health Law Hotspot. I'm Erica Adler, shareholder and health law group practice leader at Retzel & Andrus. And today I am joined by Jason Chess from Signature Bank. And Jason is a commercial banker. He provides commercial banking solutions for small and medium-sized businesses with a niche it's specializing in medical and dental practices, which is exactly why we have him here. He also specializes in managing banking relationships, including lending needs, treasury management needs, and fraud prevention services. So thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So today we're going to talk about a topic that comes up so regularly in my practice, and I think this is going to be really helpful for everyone listening. And the topic is really the real estate needs of the dental, the medical, and other types of professional practices. What happens if you want to acquire real estate? What happens if you want to build out real estate? What happens if you want to expand into the space next door, or maybe even renovate your own space that you're in? Now, every practice out there does this at some point, some multiple times. And so this is an issue that they come to you for because they're seeking financial assistance and being able to do so. So I think this is going to be of great interest to everyone. And why don't we start by you telling us a little bit about your relationship with your practice clients and some of the things that they come to you for in terms of getting help with these types of issues?
Sure. Thanks, Erica. I have a wide range of medical and dental practices that I help and manage the relationship. Some are one doctor or dentist, and some are up to, 20 or 25 doctors or dentists. So there's a wide range within that. And a lot of times they'll be expanding, purchasing real estate, whether it's an expansion into a new office or buying a building that they've been previously renting, or moving into a new building that they were renting somewhere else. But there's just a lot of different things to consider, especially if they're doing construction build-out work. So I'm not sure if you wanted me to dive into that now or...
Yeah, go ahead. You lead the way.
Sure. So, when you're buying real estate, you want to make sure you consider how much is the building worth, and does this line up with the purchase price that's being negotiated with the seller? And that's what we call the as-is appraised value of what it is today. And then if you're going to be doing build-out work to make it into a medical or dental office, or perhaps into the specs that you're looking for your practice, you have to figure out, okay, is this going to be worth, when it's as complete, what I'm putting into it? So for example, if you're buying a building for $1 million and you're going to put in $750,000 of work for a total of $1.75 million, will this really be worth $1.75 at the end? What a lot of medical and dental practices don't realize is that every dollar you put in doesn't necessarily translate into an appraised value. So it may be worth $1 million today, but the as complete value with that $750,000 of build out work added in that is in your budget and your architectural drawings might only translate to $500,000 of value in the end, according to the appraiser. So that $250,000 difference of the $1.5 million and the $1.75 million, the bank would not provide financing on that additional or that final $250,000. You would have to come up with that out of pocket. So just that's one main thing to consider that some practices don't think about is that extra money among your build out construction work that you'll have to put into the project as opposed to being financed.
Wow. So when you talk to practices and they realize this, do they tend to cut back on their plan? Do they kind of scrounge up the money on their own, or what do they tend to do?
Well, there's a variety of ways. I mean, most of them tend to be not scraping every dollar together to get to the down payment for the real estate. So they usually do have some extra funds available for the construction. And also don't forget that construction cost isn't due until the construction is wrapping up. So if they're doing a 6-month construction project, in the case, the example I just gave, they probably wouldn't need that extra $250,000 until 5 months from now. So they would have time to use the normal operations of their practice to get the additional money they would need.
Right. That's true. Do you find that practices are I don't want to call it overspending, but, you know, I've had some previous guests on where we talked about some of the offices that are being developed these days. They're just fantastic. They're beautiful. They're elaborate. It certainly doesn't look like the doctor's offices that I go to myself, but they're so beautiful. And I don't know if that's a trend and if they just look great, but it's not as much money as you might think, or are people really spending a lot of money on building out their practices right now?
I think it depends on the type of medicine or dentistry that the practice is in. I happen to have a couple of plastic surgeons that have very over-the-top offices. One of them actually has a champagne vending machine in it where you put in a coin as part of your plastic surgery procedure and a bottle of champagne comes out and you drink it.
That's crazy.
So, I mean,
I've heard of like massages and stuff like that, but I've not
right,
heard of that.
Right. So there's a variety of extravagance mixed in depending on the type of medicine we're talking about.
Well, I definitely have seen a lot of dental offices that have extremely high finishes. They're quite beautiful. And I guess, you know, I'm just curious as to whether practices are generally spending more money now than they used to in building out. Is it kind of a competitive situation? And are they spending more than they can afford, I guess, is the
other thing. I think if you're talking about dentistry in particular, it depends what area or geography you're in. You know, if you're in a market where the clientele is in a high net worth area and perhaps demands or wants that type of atmosphere when they walk in, as opposed to a different type of neighborhood where those finishes are not necessary for the clientele to be satisfied with what they're seeing. So I see it more on geography and neighborhood than anything.
It just seems, it definitely seems like a big trend. So when you're talking with a client who wants to either buy real estate or expand or build out, you know, what kind of financials are they going to need to provide? Do you ever have to say, look, I wish we could do this for you, but we can't, and this is what you need to do for us to be able to help you the way you want
right.
us to.
Right. So if they're an existing client, I might already have this, but for a brand new client, I would need to see 3 years of financial statements and or business taxes. I would need to see how this year has been going compared to last year. I know right now we're recording this in January, so year ends might not be ready. So for example, we might want to see October of last year compared to October of the year before, or whatever the most recent month available is, usually within 3 months or so. And then we're also going to want to see, typically we'll require a personal guarantee from the owners that have 20% or more ownership. So there could be four doctors that are 25% each, or, you know, two dentists that are 50-50. We'll usually want to see a personal guarantee from each. And what that means is they provide a recent tax return for their personal taxes, as well as a personal financial statement. And that's probably most of what we would need. There are some other minor things. We can look at bank checking account statements to make sure we can set up the right types of accounts. We can look at accounts receivable aging reports if they wanted a line of credit. We could look at equipment lists if they wanted to refinance equipment loans. So there's a variety of things depending on the situation, but the main things are the business and personal financials and personal financial statement.
So do you ever have providers coming to you who want to do this, but their financials don't really support it? And how do you handle that kind of situation? Is it one of those things where, why don't we talk again in a year? Or do you ever, is it ever possible to go out on a limb with some more intense loan terms in order to help them?
Well, for example, I was just talking to a medical practice the other day who's looking to expand into a different state, and they're looking to buy a building to open a practice in that other location. And they said they were looking for buildings around $2 million. And it's kind of a startup geography for them. They don't have, they have some patients, but really a lot of it's going to be word of mouth and growing and hoping, if you will. Nothing set in stone of how they'll be doing. And when I analyzed the numbers, I called them and I said, you know, actually it looks like 1.2 to 1.3 million purchase price is about the maximum that would make sense for the practice today. 2 million would really overstretch your cash flow. And so he refocused the size building that he's looking at based on that feedback. So sometimes it's that the cash flow only supports a certain building size or loan amount. And sometimes there are some rare situations where the practice just is losing money and for a variety of reasons is just not someone that we can help because the cash flow would not support the debt that they're looking for.
What about build outs? Have you had groups who want to do build outs and you simply say you got to cut your budget or you really can't do this year, or how does that work?
Right. I mean, I've been pretty lucky for the most part that most medical and dental practices have the funds to afford the build outs they're looking to do. Once in a while, you'll have something where, you know, they're looking to do X million dollars of building and, you know, six figures, maybe even seven figures of build out work. And, you know, some of it is just a little over the top when you look at, when I should have mentioned before, when I talked about financials, that if there is build out work, you need a budget with categories and dollar amounts of what the build out will contain, and you need architectural drawings. And those are the two pieces of information we need to analyze a construction deal for build out work. And so sometimes you might say, hey, I see you're buying this state of the art piece of medical equipment for $500,000. Is that something you can wait 6 months after opening to have, or do you need it on day one? And so you can kind of figure out what's actually necessary for the grand opening and what might actually it'd be nice to have, but not necessary until you're already up and running and the financials continue to improve from the new location. So I have had it where we wait a little bit to purchase a large piece of equipment just to keep the budget down.
That makes sense. So when we work with our practices, a lot of times, actually most of the time, we do recommend that a building that's being acquired be put in a separate entity. And, you know, a lot of doctors use it as a form of investment. They might end up retiring, but they still hold an interest, let's say, in the real estate, and they can be a landlord, either alone or with their partners. Is that the most common approach that you're seeing now, or are there any cons doing it that way?
Yeah, I would say 95% or more of my clients do it in that way. And obviously attorneys like you, Erica, or a CPA are the best people to advise on the tax implications of that sort of structure. But in general, having a building, having real estate in a separate LLC, separate from the practice, is the way to go. You get tax benefits, you can pay yourself rent through the practice, and there's just a lot of overall benefits. But again, probably best to consult a tax professional to make sure it's best for you.
Right. So a lot of times where we have physicians and dental practices, and you've got the younger providers who are becoming owners, whether it's shareholders or members, part of the attractiveness of becoming an owner is you get to share in that real estate. And in some deals I do, it's part of it. And some, you know, the senior guys or women are like, no, that's not part of it. That's our retirement. What do you see in terms of that trend? Do you like the idea of getting as many personal guarantees on as possible? Or once you've approved it, you don't really care? If somebody is to leave, do you want to replace them with another person? Like, how does that fit into your real estate vision for a practice?
Right. So if a partner, this does happen often, especially on mine where there are, you know, 15 or 20 doctors guaranteeing a loan. If somebody retires or leaves or, you know, passes away or whatever the situation may be, then we just reassess the overall guarantee picture. And typically it's either already fine with one person removed, or in some situations, the new person that comes in to replace that person would also be asked to provide a guarantee either right away or at the next annual renewal or whenever the next convenient time is. So that's usually how we would approach a guarantee.
Do you see senior owners generally wanting to share the real estate ownership piece or,
yes,
or not?
And to the first part of that you mentioned a few minutes ago, a lot of times what happens is an operating practice or the medical practice itself, not the real estate, will have a certain structure or ownership percentage where the younger partners are getting a piece of the pie and getting a percentage, especially a key employee that they don't want to lose. They might give 5-10% of a practice or, you know, start to ease in some percentage of ownership, but oftentimes the real estate doesn't come with that right away. The real estate is still perhaps the senior partner or the founding partners, if there's more than one, that share in the benefit of that real estate and rental income. But usually it can be used as a negotiation tactic to keep some of the key employees that are up and coming. But typically I see it on the operating company side first and then real estate maybe later.
Yeah, I generally see kind of a delay. Sometimes it could be just because they want to give the younger doctor the opportunity to be able to afford it. Sometimes there are other other reasons that they don't want to share or they don't want to share immediately. I had a situation recently with a practice that had multiple locations that were kind of operated as divisions. And one of them had a physician who had signed a, you know, either owned a building or had a long-term lease arrangement before I came on board. And that particular physician passed away and they had indemnified everybody else because that was their particular office. And there had been a build out and there had been other things related to it. But when the bank and or the other people in the group tried to pursue that indemnification, and you know, they found that in fact the assets were protected in such a way that they couldn't get access to it. Now, how does that change in the situation you're talking about where you get a personal guarantee? Is it possible for partners who own a building together to give personal guarantees, and yet one of them might be someone that, you know, you can't hold responsible, and the other owners have to take on that responsibility because of that? Have you had that happen ever?
Not too often. I mean, typically, whether there's a trust involved or other situations, like I said, either if there's one key owner, there's usually a succession plan. If there's more than one, perhaps someone replaces the person that passed away. And if there's many, as I said before, we can probably just still be comfortable without that one person involved. Right. It really only comes into play in a worst case scenario if the business were to go bankrupt or go out of business. And usually in most cases, there's key man life insurance, or I should say key person life insurance, or some other business succession that's in place that we already know well in advance we would be comfortable with.
Interesting. So with COVID having just occurred and practices getting kind of back on track, do you see any slowdown in the desire to acquire new real estate or to build out practices? You know, what can we expect in 2022 in this area of lending to practices?
You know, it's very interesting. I mean, I think we all know that some people have really struggled with COVID, unfortunately, and some have actually benefited from it in a strange way. And I think a lot of practices that had extra cash lying around, whether it's from PPP or just being a strong practice before COVID started, they had the cash and the resources to be able to pursue purchases that made sense. And maybe there was someone that was a retiring medical professional, doctor or dentist that was already thinking of retiring and said, you know what, this is a good excuse, a good time to get out and I'm going to sell. And so there've been a lot of acquisitions I've seen throughout, not 2020 as much, but more in 2021, and I already have a couple lined up coming up in January and February here in 2022. So I think it's more of, a combination of resources and perhaps existing practices getting to retirement age, thinking it's time to exit.
Right. I've definitely seen that too. But on the real estate side of that, are you like practices that aren't selling, are you still seeing them wanting to buy buildings and wanting to do build outs? Are they also using the cash for that?
They are. Some are saying, you know, I was in this neighborhood for 30 years and a lot of my patients have moved to this location or this suburb of Chicago instead. So I'm going to open a second office there because, you know, many of my patients are driving far and stopped coming. And so if I open a second spot there, many of them will come back. So sometimes it's geography related or other factors. But yes, a lot of them are definitely interested in doing real estate, whether it's moving or expanding into a new location.
Great. All right. Well, I think this is a really interesting topic. For those of you that are out there thinking of buying your building, expanding, building out, these are all really important things to think about to make sure you are structured properly legally, to make sure you're getting good accounting advice, and make sure you're getting good banking advice. So I really appreciate you coming and talking to us about this. Do you have any final thoughts you want to share on this topic?
No, I think, it's important to have great professional partners, banker, attorney, CPA. Just always consult with those folks when you're considering a real estate transaction and make sure that you're doing things in the right way.
Great. Well, thank you to Jason Chess from Signature Bank for joining us today. And I am Erica Adler from Retzel & Andrus. You can catch more of our podcast at the Health Law Hotspot and also at ralaw.com. We'll see you next time. Thanks for joining us.
The Retzel Health Law Hotspot is made available by the firm and its attorneys for educational purposes and to provide general information, not to provide specific legal advice. Use of the Retzel Health Law Hotspot does not create an attorney-client relationship between you and the firm or any of its attorneys. The Retzel Health Law Hotspot should not be used as a substitute for competent legal advice, and you should contact an attorney in your state about any legal needs or questions you may have.